Dog Works Radio Network presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. You are listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.5 in the Mattsu Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site, and you can find us over on DogWorksRadio.com, as well as on all the social media under the same name. You can also find us and subscribe to us on iTunes. Just search for DogWorks Radio. There you will find all of our episodes going back all the way to January of 2009. And I think this is about our 500, 600 episodes or so. So lots of episodes there that you can download and listen to at your leisure. Calling in from a very hot Southern California is our co-host, Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It's going very well, Robert. We're sort of in the dog days of summer, as it were. It's been very, very hot, above normal hot here in Southern California. So I'm happy that I live in the part of Los Angeles that's closer to the ocean. So it's significantly cooler where we are than it is in some parts of LA. But still, you know, when it starts getting around 90, 95, 100 degrees, it's uncomfortable.
It is uncomfortable. You know, we are back now after having a couple of weeks off. Michelle and I took a road trip across the country, over 7,000 miles, 21 states, and a heck of a lot of hot weather. I remember a couple of weeks ago we were in St. Louis, and the thermometer read 105, but the heat index said it was 119 degrees. And we were walking around the theme park, and that directly from Alaska the day before, that sure is a scorcher when it's 119 degrees outside.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, we're relatively lucky where I am as well that there's not a lot of humidity. So even when the temperatures get up high, it's not like when the temperatures are high, you know, in Boston or New York City or Florida, where it's just so humid that it's hard to do anything.
It is. And, you know, speaking of New York City, before we jump into our topic today, we did a live show in the Hudson Valley of New York when we're out that way. And we had a guest on from the Bronx in New York City, and he is an urban musher. He mushes his dogs around the city of New York, Alex, and we're looking forward to having him on the show so you and I can talk to him in just a couple of weeks. I look forward to that. There's not a whole lot of mushers in New York City, do you think?
No, although, you know, some of the past few winters, it's been nice and cold, and we've seen, like, a lot of skiers, cross-country skiers and snowshoers in Central Park. So I think if there's a lot of snow this year, maybe he should get his dogs and go through Central Park and, you know, stop at the Balto statue.
You know, we were in Central Park for the first time, and, you know, you always see that on TV or by maps, and you don't have any real idea how big Central Park is until you're in the middle of it. We spent almost an hour on those rental bikes. You know, you swipe your credit card and you can ride around the cities with these bikes, and it took us almost an hour of riding around in the park just trying to find that Balto statue. And, boy, that is a huge park. Have you ever been over there?
I have, and I'm never exactly sure where the statue is, and every time I find it, it's because I stumble upon it.
So, yeah, that was our travels there. It's good to be back in Alaska. The dogs are doing well. It's cooling off here. We're starting fall training this weekend. I know several of the mushing kennels have started already. Our rule of thumb here at our kennel is it has to be below 50 degrees, and we're getting there in the evening, so we're looking forward to hooking up the dogs this weekend. But I want to start this season off by talking about the upcoming race season. Of course, people that listen to Mushing Radio, they're typically big race fans. And in order to get to the Iditarod everybody has to qualify to get there. So my goal today is to talk about some of these races, when they're happening, and some of the interesting new rule changes that are coming in effect with some of these smaller races, just dealing with the demand. Do you have anything on your plate you want to mention, Alex?
Let's just jump into that, and then if we have time afterwards, we'll get to some other stuff.
Okay. Typically, up here in Alaska, the race season starts the first week of January. The first Saturday of January is when the Kinnick 200 Joe Reddington Memorial Sled Dog Race happens. And that is going to be on the 6th and 7th of this year, 2017. And also that same weekend is the Gen 200, which is put on up on the Denali Highway. It goes from Paxson to this side of the highway, Cantwell, and back. So it's also a 200-miler race that takes part in that part of the country. And it's very interesting, Alex, that most of the race organizers do their best to not schedule races on the same weekend as another one, because there's so few races that are out there. They do their best to accommodate everyone. So typically the big qualifiers are spread out through January and February. But what I'm finding real interesting and what I wanted to talk about today was the new sign-up procedures. I know you and I have talked many a times, Alex, about how difficult it is to qualify for the races this year, in particular from the small kennels. As you know, there's typically only 30, 40, possibly 50 spots in each one of these races for folks to sign up in. They typically start sign-ups sometime in early October, and in the last couple of years, they were full within minutes of each other. I know the Kinnick 200 last year was filled in just a few minutes, and the Copper Basin, which had a midnight sign-up, was filled up in, I believe, 12 minutes or something like that, which is just absolutely crazy. People just banging away on their computers to sign up. And that's caused a heck of a lot of concern for these small kennels. So what the Kinnick 200 has decided to do is they are going to do a lottery. So they're going to allow signups to happen anytime after noon on October 1st up until midnight of October 1st. And then they're going to draw the first 40 teams from that signup. And then everybody afterwards will be placed on a waiting list. And that waiting list can be 5 teams long, 10 teams long, 20 teams long. But it's interesting because of the rapid growth with mushing here in Alaska, you're not guaranteed spots in these races. So if you don't get into one, and the reason I bring this up, Alex, is because if you do not get into one of these races, since there's so few of these races on so few of these weekends, if you miss one of these races, you have potentially missed your qualifying season for the Iditarod the following season. Do you know much about this at all, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked a little bit about this in the past, and it's really almost like buying tickets to a rock concert, in that there
right.
is such a high demand, and people are just sitting at their computers, and they're all trying to get at it at the same time. And that, obviously, if you have, if you have one or two people who are doing that from a kennel, that's a different story than if you are a larger operation and you can have multiple people who are all trying to get in and register. So in that sense, it's definitely something that favors that favors the larger kennels. But, another factor that goes into this that we've talked about in the past few years is because we've had a few years where there just hasn't been a lot of snow, not only are there limited spots in each of these races, but every year a bunch of the qualifiers ended up being canceled for lack of snow. So not only are you looking at having to get into specific races and potentially having to wait another year if you don't get into the race you want to get into, but then you have to be strategic about which races you're even trying to get in, because obviously the races that are further north generally will have better weather, better conditions, and better snow, and some of the ones that are a little bit further south are in danger of not happening if it's another bad snow year.
Right. I know the Tustamina 200, which has been going on here in Alaska for, I believe, 30 years. They've had signups every year in October. I've signed up just about every year for the past 3 or 4 years, and for the past 3 years running, they have canceled the race due to lack of snow. I don't know if that race will ever go again for the lack of snow down there on the Kenai Peninsula. If folks don't know, that's 100, 150 miles south of Anchorage, so they don't get a whole lot of snow there anyway at the lower elevations, but they do at the higher. But as I mentioned with the Kinect 200, they're doing this lottery system. But on the flip side, the Gen 200, which is run by Zoya Deneur and her husband John Schandelmeyer, they're doing the exact opposite. They are going to do mail-in entries starting on September 15th, as long as it's postmarked on September 15th. They are going to accept entries until the race fills. This is how it used to be back in the day. Everybody sends in a check with their application, and, you know, they work their way through, and you either get in or you don't. But at least you know that if you send a check in on the 15th, you got a pretty good chance of getting in that race, and that's also a qualifier. What do you think about that system? And in particular, thinking about all those folks that are away from the road system that may or may not have fast internet access, it's tough to sign up for races or concerts if you have an old DSL connection like we do.
Yeah, you know, I think that going to a lottery system, however it is that you're going to implement it, whether it's having people mail things in and then, you know, I assume essentially if they get 50 entries on the first day that they're going to have to pick, you know, which 40 are getting into the race if there's 40 that they take. So I think that that's something that seems fairer to me, because I don't entirely like the idea of people having to, you know, sit at their computer and you know, if you fall asleep or if your attention, you know, lags or if you're not quite as fast typing things in, that you'll miss out if you're not there in the first, you know, 3 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever it is. So I
right.
feel like that's a much better way to approach it. You know, I'm not sure what the best or fairest way would be to do it. Because on the one hand, you might want to give priority to people who are trying to qualify for Iditarod, but on the other hand, all of these races definitely benefit from having people who've been around for a lot longer, people who are Iditarod veterans. So you certainly don't want to squeeze any of those people out as well.
Right, and speaking of that, also on the Kinect 200, then we're going to move on to some of the other races. They are holding spots for any previous champion, and that goes way back 30-odd years or so, however long the Kinect 200 has been in effect. They will have a spot as well. So you can think about some of the previous winners, Jake Berkowitz, Lance Mackey, all of those folks have won this race at a time or two. So if you have, just by chance, 10 or 12 past champions sign up, that leaves only 28 slots or so for the lottery. That could really throw a wrench in the wheel if they're doing it that way. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, we all want to see past champions, whether it's past Kinect 200 champions or past Iditarod champions. But on the other hand, it also seems to me like it's a little bit unfair that they just have it reserved for them if they want it, where everybody else is
right.
having to compete for the remaining slots.
Right. So moving on here, the following week, I believe it is the following week, I haven't checked on the calendar on this particular one, but is the Cusco 300. It's what is dubbed as the most provocative mid-distance race in the world. I believe they announced that they're having a $150,000 purse this year, which is an enormous amount of money for a mid-distance race. They pay their mushers very well if you place high in the standings there. But it's also held in outside of Bethel, Alaska, which means that everybody, unless you're living in the surrounding area, has to pack up their dogs and fly them out and do the whole host family thing, which can be very expensive. So I believe that's why there's such a lure with the high price of the purse to go out there to the Cusco 300. And some very big names show up to that race. I know the Boosters go out there. I know Didi has been out there. Jeff King is a perennial favorite out there. So a lot of big names head out that way as well. Do you know anything about the Cusco 300?
Yeah, you know, just that it is always a very, very fun race to watch. You know, it's one of these races that that from a fan's perspective, there's always a lot of great teams in it, and it's always, you know, you can look at how people are doing in that race, and that gives you an idea of how they're going to do later on, you know, in the season.
Right. So the following weekend, we're at the third weekend actually, it's the fourth weekend, so there's a week before in between the Cusco and the Kinnick 200. So the fourth weekend or the last weekend of January is the Copper Basin 300, which is held up in Glen Allen. So it's about 100 miles or so from here on the Glen Highway. It's held up and around the high country there in Glen Allen, one of the toughest sled dog races in Alaska. They dub it the toughest race in Alaska, and one that most mimics the conditions of Iditarod. So it's a very competitive race, but even in the last few years, they've had some very big difficulties making sure that that race has been able to go on as it should because of lack of snow. I know a couple of years ago, they had quite a bit of open water on the river, and I believe they even had to shorten the race quite a bit on the Copper Basin. But then again, you have a lot of big names that head to that race, don't you?
Right. And, you know, that's another one of these races that has a really great name, has a really great reputation. I'm just hoping that there's going to be a whole lot of snow this year. We've had a
right.
The past, it seems, 3 years, maybe 3.5 years, 4 years. There just hasn't been a lot of snow, and it has felt like, you know, obviously once you get north and once you get to a certain area, there's snow. But just in and around Willow, it feels like there just has not been very much snow. And I'm hoping that this
right.
year just turns that around.
So speaking of Willow, it was just announced a week or so ago that a brand new 300-mile race is going to start here in Willow, right here at the community center as part of the Willow Winter Carnival. It's called the Willow 300. It was originally slated to start on the same weekend as the Copper Basin, and then everybody kind of threw their arms in the air and said, hey, what gives? This isn't how things are typically run, so they moved it to the second week of the Willow Carnival, which is the first week of February, and we're looking forward to having that brand new race up here in literally our backyard. It's going to follow quite a bit of the Iditarod Trail route and turn north up towards Talkeetna, and they're going to stop the Sheep Creek Lodge as their main kind of stopover and then head on back. But what's interesting here, Alex, again, we're talking about these sandwiched weekends. This weekend that the Willow 300 is scheduled is typically the weekend of the Tustamina 300 or 200 that we just talked about. So there may be some conflict there. But what do you think about a brand new race? I think it's really exciting to have that, and in particular, if they can get that coveted Iditarod qualifier status that they're working on right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always think that it's I can only imagine that it must be an enormous undertaking for someone to launch a brand new race, because all of the things that you that we always talk about that go into Iditarod are required there. You have to make sure that the trail's broken. You have to make sure that the markers are in place. You have to make sure that you have enough race officials and judges and vets and all of that sort of stuff. But you're doing it where there's no tradition and there's no infrastructure in place, and it might be harder to get people to volunteer, to get people to be excited about a race that has never been run before and they're not quite sure how it's going to work.
Right, and speaking of that, infrastructure, you know, the big races like Iditarod and Yukon Quest, they have a tremendous financial backing, not only with corporate sponsors and all that, but some of these smaller races, even the 300s, are literally on shoestring budgets. So if they put forth all of this money to groom trails and to buy straw and to rent lodges and all of this other stuff, if those races are canceled, they could very well be in debt relatively quickly if they have to do refunds for 40-odd people or 40-odd teams very quickly. They can find themselves in a little bit of a financial pickle. What do you think?
Right. And, you know, there are some things that the organizers, I would imagine, would have to put deposits down that they wouldn't necessarily get back or wouldn't get back quickly. So there's an outlaying of money that goes on when the race is still in the organizational phase. And if it's canceled, I know that some of that money is just gone. Some of that money has just been spent. So you're right. They could the organizers could conceivably wind up, you know, being on the hook for quite a bit of money.
Right. So the following weekend this year, I believe it's the second Saturday of February, is the dual start of the Yukon Quest and the Yukon Quest 300. The Yukon Quest, as everybody knows, is the other 1,000-mile race. This year it's going from, I believe it's going from Whitehorse to Fairbanks this year. I may be wrong. It may be the other direction. But it has a very competitive field. I know this year's past champion, Hugh Neff, has signed up. Brent Sass, Alan Moore, all of the big names have signed up for that. But what is interesting is the Yukon Quest 300, and this just shows how few of these spots are available and how coveted these spots are. The perennial favorite for the Yukon Quest 300 has always been Allie Zirkle, and she happens to be on the waiting list this year. That's how quickly the Yukon Quest 300 is filled up.
Wow. I didn't realize
yes.
that. That is an amazing fact.
So just to step back a little bit, we should have mentioned this at the top, but in order to qualify for the Iditarod, you have to have at least 750 miles of racing, and there's other rules with this, but you have to have at least 200 300-mile races and one either 200, 150, or more mile race in order to qualify in terms of miles. Then you have to, you know, finish in a particular spot. You have to have a report card filled out by the race organizers, et cetera, et cetera. So as I mentioned, if you miss just one of these races or if you scratch on just one of these races for any reason, that dream or hope or desire to be in the Iditarod the following year has now been dashed, and it's not always because of weather, is it?
Right. It, you know, there's a lot of different things that go into this, and, you know, we've talked in the past about the amount of time and effort and money that it takes to complete all of your qualifiers and to have a team and to, you know, enter the Iditarod. And there's just a lot of moving pieces that go into this, and you have to get all of them right at the same time. And, you know, as with anything, when you have that many different things that all have to happen, and they all have to happen in a particular order, if one thing starts going wrong, you can cascade, and suddenly you know, instead of completing three or four qualifiers, you might have a year where you are only able to do one.
Right. The following, and then there's a couple of week break as the UConn Quest is run, and then Iditarod week starts the last week of February, and the first Saturday of March is Iditarod. It's always held the first Saturday of March. And then the week following is the Two Rivers 200. It's also an Iditarod qualifier. And what's nice about that race, Alex, is it's in March. So not only is it a little bit warmer, but it's also a time where if you did miss one of those races earlier in the season, one of those 200 milers, whether it would be the Gingin 200 or the Kinnick 200 or the Testamina 200 or the Goose Bay 150 or one of those races is canceled, you still may have a shot to get into this late season race with the Two Rivers 200, which is held up there north of Fairbanks. And then just finishing off our race season in April, I believe it is the second week of April, it's a Thursday or a Friday start, is the Kobuk 440. That's the longest qualifier here in Alaska. It's also one of the toughest to get to. It's way up north there past Nome there. It starts in Kotzebue. So it's difficult to get your team and your logistics all the way up there to start a race above the Arctic Circle. I believe it's the only race in North America that starts above the Arctic Circle, and that is in early to mid-April. So that's the race calendar. Of course, there's a bunch of shorter races speckled throughout the calendar, but typically they're not qualifiers. I know there's a brand-new race that's going to start in McGrath. This year it's supposed to be held in December, and then there'll be a race or two there. Alex, we have about 5 minutes left. Is there anything else you wanted to mention today?
Let's see. I just wanted to say that last week one of my teachers and sort of mentors died. Young and both expected and unexpectedly. And one of the things that she always said to all of her students was how important it was to discover who you are and then go and do that thing. And really just wanted everyone that she knew to be fearless. And one of the things that I've always loved about the mushing community and people who run dogs is that there is a level of fearlessness and courage that they bring to not only mushing but a lot of other aspects in their life. And that is something that is always very, very inspiring to me. And so this is a sad time, but just wanted to say that everyone out there who is a musher or who dreams of being a musher, you're here to do that and go for it.
You know, that's great advice, Alex. You know, when we have guests on our show, in particular rookies that have completed Iditarod, I always ask them that one question. If you could tell a rookie right now one piece of advice, what would that be? And I would say, probably the most prominent advice is just to go out there and do it. Get out there and run dogs, lease a team, whatever you're going to do. If that's your goal to get out there and run Iditarod or whatever, just get out there and do it. Because as you know, Alex, with your teacher friend, we're not promised tomorrow. We have no idea what's going to happen next winter. And we can sit back and plan things for the next decade, but we have no idea what's coming up. Not only may have snow here in Alaska in 10 years, you just can't afford to wait, can you?
Right. And you know, I think a lot of times we tell ourselves, I can always do this later, and I can always wait another year or wait another 2 years. And as you said, we're not really sure what's going to happen in a year or 2 years. And if there's stuff that you're wanting to do now that you can do now, you should do it.
find a way to make it happen. I know money is a big obstacle for many people, but there are ways to make it happen. There are plenty of kennels to come up here, and you can scoop poop and run B teams and do all you want. You know, I know that everybody makes work such a high priority, and you know, to pay their bills and you know, do all that stuff. And of course, all of those are important. But if you spend 20 hours a day tied to a or 20 hours a week or whatever tied to a desk, whatever you do, and you know, you're sitting there living vicariously through your computer watching these folks run Iditarod and the years tick by, pretty soon you are not going to be able to do it. So if you have the chance, if you can afford it, if you can do it, get out there and do whatever it is. And that's not only for mushing, but I would say anything that is out there in life. Alex, we are out of time. Thanks for joining us today. I know we've had a couple of weeks off. We'll be back into the swing of things, and we'll be back on in a couple of weeks. Is that right?
Yep, absolutely.
Very good. So on behalf of my co-host, Alex Stein, calling in from a super hot California, and me up here in Alaska, looking forward to running dogs here in a couple of days, we will see you guys next time. Goodbye.